On the Empire Podcast this week, we're joined by Harley Quinn herself as Margot Robbie, star of Suicide Squad, pops by. Plus, usual news and nonsense on the movie podcast that is still recovering from the worst jet lag it's ever had. And yes, I can hear you all there at home playing the world's smallest violin just for me. Hello Pod, I'm Chris Hewitt. Welcome to the Empire Podcast. Yes, I'm still slightly jet lagged after a few days in the States. You know that old saying about taking off your shoes and socks and walking around the rug barefoot and making fists for your toes?
Yeah.
It's bullshit. I tried it. It doesn't work. And a group of German guys with guns came in asking for directions to the Nakatomi Plaza.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's a coincidence.
It's weird. So weird. Yeah.
So weird.
I pointed them in the general direction of Fox Tower and there we went. Is it Fox Tower or Fox Plaza? Fox Plaza. Right, this week I'm joined by two colleagues of such lethal cunning. First up is our geek queen, who doesn't get jet lag, mainly because her transportation method of choice is a dragon.
Hey.
Or a topless Winchester, should there be one available in her area.
How is that a method of transportation?
Right, piggyback.
That's the in-flight entertainment.
Sam Dean comes in, right, shirt off.
Always You're obsessed with their shirts off.
You can access this on Winchester, which is the new
oh, I see.
Travel app you
yes.
can get on your phone. And you can specify shirtless or shirt.
So, right.
Yeah, it's like Uber X. It's exactly like that. You just climb on top and then there
well,
they go.
I'm going to leave that one there.
Right. So that's Helen O'Hara. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good, good, good. Excellent. Next up is our burly northern powerhouse.
He's really offended by that. Oh my God.
A man who treats jet lag with the same respect that Ian Howe showed the Declaration of Independence in National Treasure. It's Johnny Pyle.
Hello, Chris, mate.
Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm just Googling exactly what burly means.
Burly? You're a big guy. You're strong. You work out.
Large and strong, heavily built.
Yeah. You're more heavily
thick
built.
Thick set.
There you go.
Lusty. Why is lusty there on the synonyms?
I think it's the other kind of lusty.
That's what I was driving at, Johnny.
Okay.
Yeah. Next time you'll be the lusty northern powerhouse.
I'll take it.
Right, here's a question. This is from at Sam Summer Zero, who asks, inspired by Isaac and Elba's recent disappointing turns, this is presumably Oscar Isaac and Idris Elba, what are the best performances in heavy makeup?
Ooh.
So Sam then sent a couple of extra tweets saying that, you know, does heavy makeup, does heavy prosthetics sometimes overwhelm actors, especially maybe actors of note who aren't used to it? And then suggested Tim Curry and Legend as an option.
Tim Curry and Legend is a very good call. Mm-hmm. Virtually anyone in Planet of the Apes, the original series.
Roddy McDowall?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say anything Lon Chaney ever did, nearly, The Man of a Thousand Faces.
Of course.
Was adept at acting through makeup. Maybe he, The Phantom, is that the best one of his? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But he gave incredible, incredible performances under heavy makeup. I don't know, Jack Nicholson in Batman?
Yeah, I guess that was fairly heavy.
Fairly
it's
heavy.
Weird, isn't it? You know, you wouldn't think that, who is it who told me recently they take 3 hours? Zachary Quinto for Star Trek. He says that takes 3 hours to turn him into Spock. You wouldn't think.
It's subtle though, isn't it? Like
yeah.
It's sort of underplayed. Similar to Angelina Jolie in Maleficent, there was a lot of prosthetics on her face just to like sharpen her jaw even further, sharpen her cheekbones.
Yeah, she really struggles
further.
With her jaw not being sharpened.
I know,
in
right?
Real life.
No, but it's literally
really sloppy jawed.
It literally has a corner in that film, and so do her cheekbones. They have.
What
a,
do they do
like
to Zachary? I mean, the ears. I knew
the ears.
Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah,
the eyebrows.
Yeah,
because he didn't want to shave his eyebrows, so his eyebrows have to be covered with Spock eyebrows.
I mean, then I've got no sympathy for the man sitting in that chair for that long.
But if you had excellent eyebrows like he does, you wouldn't want to, you know. Not saying that you don't, of course. I should have phrased that differently.
Hang on, just today,
Johnny has good eyebrows.
Yeah, he does.
He's got excellent hair at the moment. I have to say, you've got really good hair.
I mean, I have a lot of hair.
Yeah,
that's not the same thing.
No, you've got a lot of hair, but I've got a lot of hair, but also not much hair. You've got a lot of hair and a lot of hair.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hair that goes all the way across your head, which is something I dream of.
It's fulsome.
It is.
Hmm.
It is. So how long do you spend in the prosthetic chair for that? Is this a 3-4 hour process every morning to get the hair going?
I mean, I stand in front of a mirror. Mm-hmm. I play with it. I put it right and then I put it left. Because when it's wet, it's straight.
Okay.
And now, over the day, it becomes more and more... Seth Rogen.
So, what about you, Johnny? Any ideas for this?
I mean, obviously, I heard the question. I went to a list online. God, for lists online.
They are saviours.
Yeah. And, I mean, so often it seems to be the... not people who are who have the ability to be hammy. So, Al Pacino in Bugsy Malone.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Bugsy Malone, Dick Tracy.
Dick Tracy.
Dick Tracy. Yeah, that's the one. Dick Tracy.
I love Dick Tracy. Can I just say that? I think it gets. I don't think it gets a lot of love, and I want to be the one to give it some love.
I've only seen it once. I keep meaning to revisit it. It's very hard to get hold of, actually.
I think I have it. I also have the soundtrack, which is excellent. Some great songs on there. There's a duet between Madonna and Mandy Patinkin. It's fantastic. All Sondheim written music on there. It's just brilliant.
But I think like, quite often now you don't have prosthetics, do you? You have to act under layers of CGI as well, though. So that, I almost feel that's the same thing in many ways, because you have to... It's not your face and you're having to
act through
put
it,
expressions on. So I think the answer is Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis.
Well, yes. If we're including CG, then absolutely he has to be in the middle.
You disagree. I
mean,
can tell.
Fine.
I mean, I've never seen someone's eyes roll so often and so expressively.
Yeah, but it's true. I mean, I have talked to a number of actors who've worked under heavy prosthetics over the years. Most notably, for example, Robert Englund, obviously, Freddy Krueger. And you have to exaggerate. You have to be larger and bolder. And Pacino in Dick Tracy is a great shout.
Ron Perlman in Hellboy.
Of course.
One of the most lovable prosthetic performances.
Yeah, and anything Doug Jones also does for Guillermo del Toro.
Equally.
Also good.
Lovable when he was the dude in Pan's Labyrinth with the hands and the eyes.
A person looking for love.
Was he?
I would say, yeah.
not like souls to eat?
No.
Definitely love, you think?
He was just a boy with his eyes and his hands standing in front of a girl asking her to love him.
Right, that's creepy.
I think. That was my reading of that.
Do we have any Oscar winners who've... I mean, Nicole Kidman, does that count?
With the nose?
I mean, she had to act around that nose.
Yeah, Charlize Theron with a lot of...
Oh, yeah.
You know... De-beautifying for Monster.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It didn't win an Oscar, but you've just put me in mind of an uncredited term, which is Gary Oldman as Mason Verger in Hannibal, who had to go through something like, I think, 8 hours of prosthetics to play that character and then took his name off the credits. What's that about? How bad was the reaction to the plastic or the glue? But for me, this comes down to, you know, a horror performances, because it is Robert Englund as Freddy Krueger, but I'm going to give a shout out to the greatest screen zombie of all time, which is Bub in Day of the Dead, played by Howard Sherman, or he's weirdly enough changed his name down to Sherman Howard.
Huh.
I don't know why.
Like Zi Zhang.
Presumably. But in the film, he's credited as Howard Sherman. He plays Bub, who is the intelligent zombie at the heart of Day of the Dead, or, you know, semi-intelligent. And that is an amazing performance. Heartbreaking and moving under these layers of crumbling Tom Savini makeup. Deliberately crumbling. It wasn't that Savini didn't finish it. So, you know, for me, there are loads and loads of answers for this. But that is up there. That is my number one. Howard Sherman.
All right.
Sherman Howard.
Sherman-ator.
The Shermanator.
Maybe that's why he changed his name, to capitalize on the success of American Pie.
Yeah. I don't think so.
No? No? Okay. All right. Well, maybe I'll ask him one day.
Yeah.
Right. So, is that it?
I think so.
Yeah. We nailed it?
Eh.
Good for us.
Have we ever?
We've nailed it to everyone's satisfaction with a definitive answer. But Tim Curry and Legend, that's a cracker.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to get
I
past
still think
that
Lon
one
Chaney,
as well.
He had that name for a reason.
John Hurt. The Elephant Man.
We should probably clarify that it was the Elephant Man we're all talking about.
John Hurt's a cracker. John Hurt is a cracker. Ooh, that may be the best. You know what I mean? By a credible actor who is seen by his peers as being one of the best in the business.
Sure.
But I think Howard Sherman is fantastic because he's not seen as one of the best in the business, but look how much soul and heart he infests Bub with. It's very, you know, because he doesn't just go, he does more than that.
Mm.
Yeah, so Howard Sherman. Joint top with John Hurt and Lon Chaney.
Thank you.
Well done. Okay, so we've nailed that one. But yeah, the whole thing about Isaac and Elba, I don't know, I just thought the characters were there.
I don't understand why you put quite such pretty people in quite so much makeup, but, you know, sure.
Yeah. I don't think the characters are quite there.
Yeah, I think it's more character than the makeup in that case. I think the makeup wouldn't have been such a barrier if we'd liked them more or been more interested in them.
But, I mean, you can make characters if you're an actor. Benicio del Toro in Usual Suspects, there's no character there, and his performance comes through. And
sure, but I think both of them tried to do something with their performance but were completely unsupported by the plot.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's my feeling. Anyway, we've had spoiler specials on those. We should probably leave spoilerific discussions of those.
Also, shout out to my boy, Emperor Palpatine.
he's your boy? You're claiming him as your boy?
He's my boy, Ian McDiarmid, in the Return of the Jedi. Fantastic performance and heavy makeup. And it's weird, isn't it, how worse the makeup gets in Revenge of the Sith. It's just awful in Revenge of the Sith. And it's so much better in Return of the Jedi, which was obviously made some 33 years earlier, 32 years earlier. That's a weird one.
Mm.
Discuss that. 800 words by Monday. If you want to have your question read out on the Empire podcast to your satisfaction, as that one just was for Sam Summers, then do send
them
in to us.
You're welcome,
Sam. Yeah, absolutely. Think nothing of it, Sam. We're here for you. Do send them in via Twitter at Empire Magazine is our handle. Use the hashtag Empire Podcast. You can Facebook us as well, where we're Empire Magazine. And you can email us also, podcast@empireonline.com. Hey, should we have some movie news?
Yes. There was a piece of news this week that was astonishing, that was delightful, that was, I think, maybe the antidote to all of the bad news that has come forth from the world this year. They're remaking Splash. Now, you may wonder why on earth we'd be pleased about this. They're remaking Splash with Gillian Bell in the Tom Hanks role and Channing Tatum in the Daryl Hannah role. So I am amused already, and I just hope that the film lives up to that premise.
I do hope the film delivers beyond that one joke premise of Channing Tatum as a merman.
No, I'm not saying that's the joke particularly, but you know, it is delightful.
It's the joke.
But also, Gillian Bell is the sort of the modern Tom Hanks. I think that's kind of delightful. So I've always been very amused by her. She's generally had quite small but catchy supporting roles in things, including, of course, opposite Channing in 22 Jump Street. Uh-huh. And I think that'll be quite an interesting kind of little mix.
Yeah, certainly very interesting casting. She's also very good in Goosebumps in a small role.
Yeah, she was, yeah.
Improvised most of her dialogue in 22 Jump Street. So she's very funny in that film.
Mm-hmm.
So
we'll see her in Office Christmas Party later in the year.
Oh, we will, so, will we?
We will.
We will, okay. So Gillian Bell, in case you don't know who she is, so she is the ultimate bad guy in 22 Jump Street.
Yeah.
The college roommate who habitually rips on Jonah Hill because he's clearly too old to be a college student. which, of course, she is as well, but I guess that's a joke. And she's the horny aunt in Goosebumps who
horny,
falls in love.
That's harsh. But yeah,
she's very, that's essentially her characteristic, isn't it?
A bit romantic, I think.
Okay.
But
All right.
Sexy romance.
Sexy. Okay. She wants sexy time with Jack Black.
Don't we all?
And who doesn't? Absolutely. So she's very funny, and it's interesting. She, you know, this could be the start of a breakout.
Yeah, it could be.
So, but yeah, I do hope there's more to it than just, you can imagine the joke. You can imagine the conversation, can't you? Like, oh, can we get to play the mermaid? And it's like, wow, well, but Channing Tatum, that'd be quite funny. And then I hope there's more beyond that.
I feel like there is. I don't think he signs up for a lot of films without there being more than one joke in them. Like, his comedies so far have had more than one joke.
Yes, this is true.
So I feel like if he's signed up, he probably didn't just do it because he found the thing funny. He probably thought, okay, there's a script here as well.
I mean, we're assuming it's a comedy.
Yes, well, it's a remake of Splash, which was a comedy, so I feel like...
But, you know, they've changed, like, certain things. I mean, who knows how far they'll go? Maybe it's a gritty urban drama.
Yeah.
Indeed.
A deeply disturbing horror film, because the concept of a mermaid or a merman is really just off-putting and awful. So,
Wow, you're really, like, quite harsh there.
But it is. It's
Think
a
about
person...
the mermaids in Pirates of the Caribbean 4.
Yeah.
Think about them.
No, shan't. Or
think about them in Joe Wright's critically lauded Pan.
Actually, they were quite good in that. That was an interesting twist on mermaids, I thought. I liked them.
But they were terrifying and creepy.
Well, you may have been terrified and creeped. I was amused and delighted.
All right. What else do we have?
I mean, do we need any other news? All right, fine, I guess. A Fantastic Beasts sequel has been dated for November 2018. We all knew it was coming. It was originally pitched as a as a trilogy, but 2018 is looking like the date for that one, so a 2-year wait after we see this one in a couple of months, which, you know, hopefully is a sign that they're pretty happy with where it is and that they're, you know, confident in what they have and that they're moving straight into the next one.
Yeah, just like with the DC Universe.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, that's not... Anyway, sure. In really fascinating movie set filmmaking news, Mel Gibson and Sean Penn are going to work together on a film called The Professor and the Madman.
Who is who?
That's a question we've all been asking for many, many years now. But this is a story about the creation of the Oxford English Dictionary. Of course, in 1857, Professor James Murray...
Oh, I was going to say Professor and, James Dictionary.
No. Good guess, though. Okay. Thanks, yeah. That's the role for Gibson. He began compiling the OED, hugely ambitious project, of course. And then Sean Penn's in negotiations to play Dr. W.C. Minor, who submitted more than 10,000 entries while an inmate at an asylum.
Okay.
For the criminally insane, wow. Not just the mildly, you know, disturbed, but the actual criminals.
But people were thrown into asylums for, like, small reasons back then, right?
Well, women were, at any rate, but probably not doctors so much. Also, again, I refer you to the criminally insane bit, which suggests that he wasn't, you know, just noodling about.
So this is like a real-life Arkham.
I mean, it's...
He's like Calendar Man, but with words.
Okay.
Yeah.
A real-life Arkham.
I'm really excited about this now.
Yeah. You are? So you're on board?
We're working, honestly, we should be in the room as they're developing the script.
I think it would help. It would be invaluable to them. I think Sean Penn's a fantastic actor, Helen, but I'm not sure he's going to be convincing as a minor.
Okay.
Because he's in his 50s. No, it's
minor. It's a surname.
I get that.
Okay. Hey, but the dictionary is a fascinating and interesting subject.
Is it?
Yeah.
Very good episode of Blackadder.
Precisely. If it's as good as that episode,
half as good as that,
then we're in for a treat, which can be found under tea. in the dictionary.
Have you actually tried to try and, if you try and write an entry for a dictionary, it's very difficult. Like, try and define a net that would happily, you'd happily sit in a dictionary. It's very difficult.
I don't think I've ever tried. Or, I mean, you know.
I mean, why would you have done? And let's be honest, but yeah, it was set as a task for us at school.
Really?
To try and, we were given words and we've tried to write the dictionary definition of it, and it's actually very difficult.
Fiddy bloggy sode.
No one can define that, Chris.
I defined it.
Okay. So anyway, this is something that obviously needs a director. Mel Gibson was apparently at one point considering directing, but is now not going to. He's passed that job on to Farhad Safinia, who wrote Apocalypto and is now making his feature, anyway, directorial debut, it looks like, with this one. So yeah, I mean, it's an interesting film. It's maybe going to be an interesting set as well. Let's just put it like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think so. I think it could be, yeah, or might be
maybe,
harmonious. And
maybe their intensities will kind of work off each other nicely, and it'll be magic.
It could be the start of a beautiful friendship. Hey, do you guys know which actor comes first in the dictionary?
You tried this yesterday, didn't you? What was it?
No.
Okay, I don't know, Chris. What actor comes first in the dictionary?
Thank you, Helen. Well, Helen, I'm glad you asked. It's Alan Aardvarken. Well, what else is happening this week?
There's not a huge amount of news this week. It has been confirmed that Daredevil's Eldon Henson, aka Foggy, will appear in The Defenders.
Oh, I was excited just when you said the name.
I know, Foggy.
Oh my word. Oh.
So yeah, he'll be in The Defenders. It's not perhaps the most massive surprise in history, you know.
Yeah.
But it's kind of good news.
It's huge news. You can't have The Defenders without Foggy Nelson.
Okay.
The two go together. It's like Simon and McCartney or Lennon and Garfunkel. They're simpatico. Mm-hmm. They fit.
Okay.
It's going to be amazing watching him do whatever it is that he does in that show.
Oh, he was really likable in the first series of Daredevil.
Maybe the bloom came off the rose slightly in the second season. Do you see that Mark Ruffalo has rapped already on Thor Ragnarok?
Yes. That's exciting.
That's interesting. Does that indicate that he doesn't have a huge role? Or that, you know, does it indicate that perhaps the Hulk doesn't have a big part? Or
you say that to his face.
Yeah, to his big green CG face. Or because he is largely CG, that maybe Ruffalo just came in, ran around a soundstage for a little bit in a leotard with some light bulbs attached to his face, and then that's it. He's done.
I don't know the answer.
I don't know. I don't know why I asked you, Johnny, because it became apparent to me halfway through my question that you didn't know the answer.
But I don't think any of us know the answer. I think if you'd turned to Helen, you would have got a similar blank
I'll try
look.
It. Hey, Helen.
Yeah?
Does this indicate that perhaps the Hulk doesn't have a huge role in Thor Ragnarok?
Well, perhaps, but
see,
it could also be that
that's
he's
what you do.
Finished.
You speculate. You don't just shut it down.
I don't know, Chris.
Honestly. But you see, the other huge revelation from the set of Thor Ragnarok this week is that Thor is going to have short hair because Ruffalo posted some Instagram pics of Hemsworth with, not a crop. But
long beard.
Beard. So
I have heard from a source that will become apparent in the next issue of Empire.
Who is it?
No, it's a source at this point. It'll become apparent in the next issue of Empire.
Do you
Johnny.
See who the source is, Helen?
That this is a very beardy film. So, there you go. That's the exclusive scoop on Thor Ragnarok.
Who could it be?
Those of you who are familiar with Chris's terrible impressions will know who it could be.
I know who's in the next issue. I don't know who it is.
But we should point out that that gentleman is not in the movie, which is visiting the set of the movie.
No, we shouldn't.
We shouldn't point that out?
No.
Oh.
I now know who it is.
Okay.
I'm there.
You're there. Okay, good.
Intriguing. Johnny, what do you got?
I have news from the world of Netflix.
Ooh, exciting.
Christopher Guest's new film, Mascots, is going to be premiering in October.
Hooray.
That is exciting.
And what kind of mascots are we talking here? Are we talking like small trolls that you have on your desk during your GCSEs?
We're talking about sports mascots.
Yeah.
Oh, so people.
Yeah, so people in costumes. My friend Rich was once the mascot down at Fulham FC.
Amazing.
What is that? Is that a
it's
kind
a
of...
badger, I think. I think it's a badger.
A badger?
Yeah. I mean, he's not the finest of the football mascots. That would be Bertie B., who is Burnley's mascot. We used to have the Holland's Pie Man when we were sponsored by Holland's Pies. So we had two. And I also like Gunnosaurus Rex.
Yeah, I do like Gunnosaurus. That's Arsenal's mascot. But of course, they all pale in insignificance next to Liverpool's Mighty Red, which is a poor jobbing actor in a bird costume.
So this will be more about the poor jobbing actors than the costumes themselves,
that's
I'm guessing.
Exactly
yes,
what
it's
it is.
It's the people inside and, you know, what they... I mean, in many ways, those people are the greatest performers under prosthetics.
In many ways, yeah, this is tying up back together, isn't it?
The pathos that Gunnosaurus brings to every Arsenal match day is just...
I am so moved. I may take up watching football just to see this.
Yeah, I mean, what Sky really should do is they should have, you know, they have a camera that follows around one player. They should just do that for the mascot. Gunnosaurus Rex is on it for, you know, pre-match, during the match, half-time, afterwards. He is just 3 hours of just heart-wrenching.
Well, so this film should have a good start. I think it's good, isn't it? Because Christopher Guest is always at his best when he's exploring tiny little unlikely niches of human endeavour, like dog showing or folk music. And this feels instantly like another such
Yeah, absolutely. Niche. I mean, the type of person you have to be to want to be a star, but no one sees who you are at all and you could be anybody, is a very interesting thing to me. I mean, it's about American mascots, of course, and they are, you know, bigger over there because they're on badges more. Like, I mean, Michigan State, we all know, is a Spartan.
Oh, I think we all know that.
And they are the Spartans, and they are Michigan State Spartans, and, I mean, Burnley aren't the Burnley Bertie Bees, although maybe they should be. And, in fact, Hull had a big problem with going, like, they were going to be called Hull City Tigers, and the fans went mental about it.
Huh.
So it's a different culture over there, and it's far more, you know, part of their sporting culture in the same way cheerleaders and all that razzmatazz is.
Okay.
I honestly lose my shit when I see a mascot. I have to have my... If I walk past anyone in the costume, I become a 5-year-old kid again, and I have to have my picture taken with them. And my wife and I were recently in Nottingham, and I walked past someone dressed as a giant milkshake, and I had to have my picture taken with this person. And
this does explain why it takes you so long to get from one end of Comic-Con to the other.
It's great. There's something about it I just absolutely love. And if it all goes tits up for me here at Empire, I would happily become a mascot. You know, because I just think there's some, I think I could become a milkshake. I think I have it in me.
I think that's a different thing, isn't it? Isn't that like A guy trying to direct you to McDonald's is not the same
thing. I see them all as roughly the same thing. If it's someone dressed as a giant chicken promoting Nando's, I lose my shit. If it's someone in a giant Colonel Sanders costume, hang on a second, this is all related to food, isn't it? That's what this is. I've just realised this. No, but if I go to a baseball game and I see a mascot in the States and I have to have my picture taken with the mascot, it's just something that I have to do. And I just love the psychology of someone who has to put themselves inside a mascot every single day. Not in a sexual way, obviously, but in actually getting inside the costume. And I'm really excited about this, even though I really, really didn't like Chris Guest's last movie, which was 10 years ago now, For Your Consideration. Did you see that?
It was patchy.
I thought it was awful. And I thought it displayed a sort of either a willful misunderstanding of how filmmaking works, which is weird given that he's a filmmaker, or the film industry works, or just it had contempt for the film industry, which I didn't particularly like. But this one, as far as I can understand, it's all improvised. It's about the World Mascot Championships, and this cast is astonishing.
Why do they compete? Never mind. I'm sure all will become revealed. Clear. Yeah.
This cast: Jane Lynch, Parker Posey, Fred Willard, yes. Ed Begley Jr.
Good.
Chris O'Dowd.
Acceptable, yes.
Zach Woods, who is so good in, if you, you know, tall, lanky US actor, you saw him most recently in Ghostbusters in Silicon Valley, that guy. Tom Bennett, so brilliant, of course, in Love and Friendship.
We love him.
Kerry Gottlieben, Jennifer Coolidge, John Michael Higgins, Jim Pittock, who's a very funny British comedian who's made it over there in the States, Bob Balaban. No Chris Guest himself, no Michael McKean, no Harry Shearer. That's interesting, but that's a hell of a cast. So I'm excited about that. Well done.
Good work.
Well done. Well done, everybody.
Round of applause.
October 13th, Netflix. There we go. Anything else? Or should we move on to our guest?
I think that's the big news. I mean, I'm sure something else will happen as soon as we record this, but, you know, yeah.
All right, then, well, let's have a guest. Suicide Squad, the latest DC Comics adaptation in which a group of bad guys are recruited by the US government to fight the good fight, opens today, in fact. At the centre of the squad sits Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn, marking the first live-action iteration of the Joker's right-hand lady. Robbie was in London this week to mark the film's opening, and so we sent Nick Desemlian, flagrantly contravening the confines of his restraining order, along to speak to her. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Empire Podcast, Margot Robbie. How are you?
Thank you. Very happy to be chatting to you guys.
How are all things Suicide Squad?
Brilliant.
And what would you say so far is the question you've been asked the most? Obviously, so that we can avoid it.
Okay. No, normally when I do like a press tour, there is like one question that is like always the opener and the definitive sort of like starting point of an interview. But there actually have been quite varied questions on this tour. I'm trying to think what we get asked most. It's really people just say, like, tell us about Harley. That's kind of like a good starting point generally, I guess.
I'll cross that one off the list.
Yeah, yeah.
Just at the top.
You guys know who Harley is? Cool. You got it. You get the idea.
So I was at Comic-Con this year, as were you.
Wicked.
I saw conservatively about 30 Harley Quinns walking around.
30? I saw about 300. I was like, I was so... Do you know what made me happiest? I mean, I get really, really excited, A, when I see someone dressed as Harley, but B, when they've done it so, like, you can tell they've taken the time to look up what the tattoos are. And then you meet someone who shows you their bat and they have the exact writing that I had on my bat, on their bat, word perfect. I'm like, the dedication makes me so happy. And then what makes me even happier now is when I see dudes dressed as Harley and they've got like a beard and they're just like rocking the piggy tails and like mini shorts anyway. I was like, you guys rock.
Is there a trick to it? What makes a great Harley Quinn cosplay?
Commitment. You got to commit. You do your homework. You look up what the tattoos are. You get it word perfect. Like the commitment, it's all in the details.
And you learned some new skills for this, including bubblegum blowing.
No, I was actually quite a proficient bubblegum blower before that. Oh, okay. So it was a skill that I possessed as a young child and harnessed and really elevated in this role, I think.
It's actually more difficult than you'd imagine.
It really is. And you got to get the right kind of bubblegum. I they're not paying me to say this, but I used Hubba Bubba on set and I picked Hubba Bubba because when I was a kid, that was like my favorite thing ever was Hubba Bubba. And I was like, I understand the consistency, the viscosity of the gum, the texture. It has to be Hubba Bubba.
I like to think that you had a gum wrangler who was just following you around and picking up the gum. And that's a cool
job. I mean, really, really, Kevin, our props guy who gives you any prop that you would be, you know, handling in a scene. So they had a mountain of gun in the props department.
Because there's a question, A, when do you get rid of it? Is it when the flavour's gone? And then B, what do you do with it?
Totally. I hear you. Like all conundrums I've worked through during the filming of this film. Yeah, look, sometimes it's just not the right time to spit out your gum. Sometimes the flavour's gone and you got to stick with it for a while. It's just until you can throw it away in a safe place. I wouldn't, you know, I can't stick it on a bit of set. Like, everyone's going to know who did that. So I was very careful about throwing it out in the right way.
Yeah. Well, someone would have probably taken it and eBayed it. So it's I imagine, for the best.
People always make that joke. I'm like, if someone, like, when, you know, like, I don't know, whatever, and someone's like, I'm going to sell this on eBay. I'm like, if you did, I reckon you would not even make 75 cents. Like, who is going to pay for
I think you underestimate the internet as a whole. But
you know what? It is a deep, dark hole that I haven't delved further enough into, maybe.
Speaking of skills, I did look at the IMDb page for this film, and there's an entry in there saying that on the set of Suicide Squad, Margot Robbie learned to hold her breath for 5 minutes, which struck me as A, probably impossible, and B, peculiar. Is this true?
Really? I thought you were going to say it struck me as A, awesome.
Well, yes.
That
clearly.
Was C. That was C.
It was implied.
That was C. Got it. No, I did. And yeah, that's the coolest thing. Like, anytime you take a role, you get to learn some sort of really specific skill that then is like this party trick you have forever. So now I can say I can hold my breath for 5 minutes.
How did this come up? Presumably it's not bubble blowing related.
It is not bubble blowing related. There was a scene, an underwater scene, and in order to shoot it, it's funny because I think people watch movies these days and assume that everything's VFX, and when you see something remarkable, you're like, sure, a computer did it. It's like, actually, no. Actually, we've figured out a way to do it in most cases, and especially when you have David Ayer, who wants everything to be real. He wanted us to do all our own stunts. He wanted as little VFX as possible. So anyways, we were doing the underwater scene for real, and it's obviously a lot easier to shoot the longer I can hold my breath so that we don't have to stop. And I think the bigger thing too is for me to not panic. Like, when I'm stuck, you know, 10 meters underwater in a broken windscreen, if you have a panic attack, then you actually could drown. So you have to be really comfortable underwater.
What's the trick? I could do maybe 15 seconds.
What I thought, honestly, when I started. So they got a freediving expert. His name's Kirk, and he came in, and I did 4 sessions with him, and that's really all it took. I mean, I wish I got to do more, but by the time we got to 5 minutes and I was like trying to compete with Ingrid, my stunt double, she got to 5.5 and I was like, I need to do another session. They're like, no, 5 minutes is more than enough. Like, no more sessions. It's fine. But really, once you have someone explain like the technical side to it, and yeah, like once you're taught how to do it, it's actually quite easy. And then there's no feeling that you're going to freak out underwater, because the scene takes maybe a minute and a half, and I'm sitting under there going like, I've got a couple minutes left, like I'm good.
I'd ask you to prove it, but that would make for really bad radio.
It might be a bit boring, especially when there's absolutely no visuals right now.
We should do
you'd
it.
Never know if I'm really doing it or not.
We should do it. Through my I know you guys work very hard, but you also partied very hard. I talked to Will Smith, and he said he was really having trouble keeping up with you guys. So I'm wondering who was the biggest partier.
Oh, it's actually a tough competition with this squad. I mean, I think the biggest contenders would probably be between Jai and Kara. You know, those two have stamina, which is really important when it comes to partying. And the dark horse of the group, Karen. Little Karen Fukuhara, who looks so sweet. And this is her first film. She's wild. She's an animal. you don't underestimate Cassie.
Amazing. Shock revelation there. And I know Jared wasn't really with you guys much on the set, but mm-hmm. you're on the press tour with him now. Mm-hmm. Is Mr. J still popping up occasionally?
No, I don't see any Mr. J. It's really odd.
Is it weird? Freaky?
It's so weird because they're just two totally different people to me. Like, I can't associate one with the other at all. Which is really odd. Yeah. And
is that completely alien to you? That completely immersive method approach to acting?
Totally. I hadn't worked with anyone who goes that, who stays in character for as long as Jared did.
And have you had any kind of visitation with Rat?
I haven't seen Rat.
We should put this in context just quickly. Because you were gifted a rat by Jared.
I was gifted many things, but the rat seemed to be the most publicised of those gifts, which I have to say I'm actually happy about, because I don't want to go into details of the other things I got given. But yeah, rat was a gift from Mr. J, and you know, in keeping with the character, Harley would cherish rat, which I did until he got evicted from my house that I was renting in Toronto. They weren't a fan of having a rodent.
I can't imagine why.
Rat currently lives with Guillermo del Toro, the director, in Toronto. He's got a happy life. We don't need to feel sorry for him at all. But yeah, I miss him.
Has Guillermo sent you a picture of him?
He hasn't. Maybe I should get in touch. Yeah. And you know,
he might turn up in Pacific Rim too.
Maybe.
Because you were saying anatomically he's quite an interesting rodent, in that he has rather large testicles.
He does. Mm. I don't know if that's a rat thing or if that was just a rat thing, but it was impressive.
So he could be in Pacific Rim with
he should be in showbiz either way. I'm not sure what kind of film, but something.
I've got a sort of related question, in that you are doing a voice in an animated film called Larrikins.
Yeah.
Coming up, and that's about...
No one's asked me about this yet.
Well, world exclusive, but yeah. It's about a type of Australian animal called...
A dingo.
Oh, is it about a dingo?
Yeah, I play a dingo. No, it's about a bunch of Australian animals, but I play a dingo.
Oh, I read it was about... Yeah, so Hugh Jackman is voicing a bilby.
He's a kangaroo, a big red.
Wow. A lot
Bilbies
of
and big reds, very different animals.
What's a bilby?
A bilby is a tiny... No. So Hugh Jackman, there is a bilby in it, and a bilby is maybe the least known of Australian animals, I think, because anytime I mention it, everyone... I kind of get the glazed over look from people, but a bilby is a really small creature. It's... I'm trying to think what you'd say it's like. It's kind of like a possum, rat, kangaroo looking thing, but it's really small, has a long tail. It's adorable though, big eyes. It's really, really cute. And Hugh Jackman plays a big red, which is a kangaroo, but a big kangaroo.
Interesting.
Mm. Wow. And so it's kind of an Australian ratatouille or something like that.
Yeah, totally.
Interesting.
And completely unrelated to that, but watching The Big Short, obviously you do make an appearance in there. Mm-hmm. How does one come across that scene? How was that pitched to you?
It was so odd, because I got sent the script and I read the synopsis and I thought, they mustn't have meant to send this to me. It's like a male-dominated cast. It's about financing. Like, I don't know why I'm being sent this script. And then I started reading it and I got to page 13 and Ryan Gosling's character's like, and now we're going to go to Margot Robbie in a bathtub. And I was like, what? And that's really weird, because I read, maybe 8 scripts a week or whatever, like tons and tons of scripts. I've never seen my name in a script. It's always a character. You never see someone mention real people names. It was really odd. I was like, I don't know what I'm looking at. And then I turned the page and, I read my part and I was like, wow, wicked. And then I got to the end of the script and I was like, I have to do this. This is an important story to be told. And though I'll be involved in a very small way, it's, I'd love to be. And it was honestly the best day on set, like the easiest job I've ever done in my life. I did half a day in a mansion in Malibu, drinking 20-year-old Dom Perignon and sitting in a bathtub. Like, and then I got all this credit for a film that I did hardly any work for, really. Like, people worked their asses off for that film. I got drunk in a bathtub for half a day, and suddenly I'm at the Oscars and people are like, congratulations on your film. And I was like, I do not deserve any congratulations at all.
Are there constantly guys coming over filling the bathtub up with hot water so it doesn't get all...
They were filling it with cold water, because the more champagne I drank, the red of my face was going. And with the heat of the bathtub, I was like, I've got very rosy cheeks in that scene.
And of course, if you had to do it again and you slipped under, you could hold your breath for 5 minutes.
I could do my lines underwater.
We got to ask about Inferno, because we were talking about this earlier. You, there's a Clapham nightclub called Inferno.
Don't pretend you don't know it. Don't say it's like this ambiguous
I genuinely
thing.
Didn't, but...
I've heard of it. Yeah. Here, tell, there is some nightclub.
What's the...
Hi!
Cara Delevingne has joined us.
Hey, they gave me a mimosa in my last interview. We should wrangle some more.
How did you do that?
I know, I took it with me.
Oh,
do you want some?
Jesus, what have I done?
What are you
doing? Hey,
like
hello.
This.
Welcome to the Empire Podcast.
Just about to start talking about Infernos.
You were?
Yeah.
Has she taken you to Infernos?
No.
We actually haven't been together to Infernos.
No, but I've literally heard about it more than I've heard about anything else in the world.
Have you ever been?
No, but we were going to go to Fabric together too then.
We were going to go to Fabric. I've never been to Fabric and you've never been to Infernos, and both of us like claim that they're the best. And
should we do it tonight?
Shall we?
Both in one?
Shall we?
Knock them out.
And on that bombshell, thank you, Cara Delevingne, for Kate Crashing.
Cool. Okay.
And I think on that bombshell, I think we're done.
Margaret, thank you very much. I'm sure there was some serious questions on the way.
We didn't have any.
I think that covered
it. We covered all the important things: champagne, infernos, rats,
great,
bilbies. Didn't talk about Suicide Squad, but we did a little bit.
Yeah, the rat was tangentially related.
Yes, totally. I enjoyed it nonetheless. Thanks for having me, guys.
Okay, that's the lovely Margot Robbie there, speaking to the equally lovely Nick Desemlian.
Maybe not equally.
I don't know. His beard is pretty luxuriant these days.
That's true. And hers is nowhere to be seen.
Right, there's really only one film to talk about this week, and that is genuinely the case, because there's actually not a lot out there. Studios seem to be running scared of Suicide Squad. It's going to have a monster opening weekend, in the States at least. They're talking $150 million thereabouts. So, is the movie itself, David Ayer's movie, is it obviously going to be a huge hit at the box office, but how does it fare as a piece of filmmaking? Is it an uptick in quality, for example, after the relative disappointment of Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice? So, Johnny.
Well, we don't agree particularly on the film as a trio, but I think we can all agree on that question, that yes, it is better than Batman v Superman.
Yeah.
Good, okay, we're off.
I love the fact that we're a trio, like a jazz trio.
Jazz, okay, cool.
I'll maybe do a jazz
I was worried for a second you were doing a banjo impression, so I didn't want to be that kind of trio.
No, I was playing a double bass, but really badly.
Okay.
I was playing it almost like a
guitar. And on its side for some reason.
Yeah, strung across my hip.
Anyway, so Suicide Squad.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Okay, so we are in agreement that it's better than Batman v Superman.
Yes.
I watched Suicide Squad and really liked it, and I understand that that is not the way the critical winds are blowing for this movie, but I got a real kick out of it. I mean, I don't think it's perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, I'll talk about the finale slightly and just say the CGI finale didn't particularly work for me. The villain didn't particularly work for me. It is quite messy. We were talking before the podcast started about how it seems to start twice. You are introduced to Will Smith's and Margot Robbie's characters, and then you introduce them again as they start to run through the squad at a meeting, and you go back and see footage of them again. So it's a really oddly put together film. But I, you know, sat down and was in that world and enjoyed it. And, you know, I got a kick out of quite a lot of things. And I absolutely don't think it's perfect. But in the same way, I don't think the new Star Trek is perfect. But, you know, I still enjoy that to a point. And it is better than Batman v Superman. But I did like it. I liked Margot Robbie in it. I liked Will Smith in it. I really liked, and this is mind-blowing to me, I really liked Jai Courtney in
it. He's really good in it.
Because he has never been even approaching good in anything else.
Oh, I'm gonna defend Jai Courtney a little bit before, because he's really good in Jack Reacher.
No, he's not.
He's good in Jack Reacher. He is good
absolutely
in Jack Reacher.
Not.
Can we not turn this into your usual Reacher argument, guys?
No, because Johnny and I agree on Reacher. We love Reacher.
I know,
so
you,
it's not.
Yeah,
it's,
but you know. Then you have the argument about the films, and I don't. Let's just.
We have arguments about the minutiae within the films, within the scenes, within line readings of certain.
And you know what? Reacher said nothing, guys. So anyway, Suicide Squad, you probably know already. It's Viola Davis's government wonk, who's kind of the real big bad in this film in many ways. She's a really steely presence.
She is evil, man.
You do not want to mess with her. She brings them in together, so they have a squad with deniability. In a world filled with metahumans, we're still dealing with this whole, oh, what does Superman mean for the world kind of thing that they tried to explore in Batman v Superman. So her idea is, we get these metahumans in, we get these remarkably gifted people, and we use them and abuse them and basically lose them if we need to. And that's kind of the setup for the thing. So they're sent into action in a mostly deserted city against the big bad and the big bad's minions, which are really horribly designed.
What do you think?
Yeah, I didn't like that at all.
Okay.
But at least they're, you know, a menace. They're hard to kill. And so Rick Flag, basically the one sent in with the Suicide Squad to kind of keep an eye on them, keep control of them.
And I certainly think that dynamic works, the dynamic between Flag and then the squad themselves.
Yeah, for the most part, I think that was really good. I think actually Kinnaman was very good in this, and it's a bit of redemption for him as well after RoboCop, you know.
Well, I mean, he's also in season 4 of House of Cards.
Which was also good, yeah.
And in that, it's clear that his head is too small for his body.
Yeah.
Because he's clean shaven and has very short hair in that. But he has longer hair here, which is like given some volume. And he has a beard, which suddenly puts his head in the correct proportion to his body.
Is this why you have a beard and lots of hair as well? Freakishly small.
I have a beard to try and hide my jowls.
Uh-huh. I don't agree with that. I mean, I agree with the beard to hide the jowls thing. It's the only reason I have this dreadful attempt at facial hair. But I think his head's far too big. There is a moment in this movie.
I mean,
movie.
That is patently incorrect.
No.
Have you seen House of Cards season 4?
No, I haven't actually, but there's a
check it out, man. It is remarkable how small his head is.
Okay.
He's just got shoulders about 6 feet wide. I think
there's a moment in this movie where he's yelling at Will Smith. That's predominantly what he does in this movie. He yells at Will Smith. And there's a bit where his head is jutting forward so far from his neck, I thought it was almost like a prosthetic prop in some way. And I thought his head was actually going to detach from his neck. It really, almost like a chicken.
In fairness, it's the kind of film where his head could detach from his neck and you'd be like, oh yeah, that guy has a head that can detach from his neck. So anyway, on the film itself, I quite liked Will Smith as well. I had actually very few problems with any of the cast. I have some issues with the direction and with the script, and in particular with the film's attitude to women, which I think is horrendous. And I think it undermines Harley Quinn's otherwise triumphant first appearance. I think Margot Robbie's brilliant casting. She looks the part. She kind of seems to get the part. But I don't think the film knows what to do with her. And I think the flashbacks to give some depth to her character damage it instead. David Ayer, I was at the premiere last night and David Ayer came out and he said, you know, this film is for real people in the real world. This film is for the fans. This film is for the people who read the comic books. And if that's all the case, he's forgotten that women read the comic books and women are the fans. And in particular, in the case of Harley Quinn, women are the ones who made her enormously popular. And I don't think he gets that. But having said that, Margot Robbie is smoking.
Although she doesn't smoke in the movie.
No, well, that would get you more than a PG-13 these days.
Yeah. So let's just go through the squad themselves in case people don't really know who's in the film and who's who. We talked about how good Jai Courtney is in the film, and he is good in the film. And he plays a character called Captain Boomerang.
Yeah, with a straight face.
On the marketing, he's just called Boomerang because they realise how ridiculous it is.
Yes, but in the film, he's actually called... He is called Captain Boomerang.
He has Captain written across one of his jackets at one point as well.
Start off as a private boomerang? Did he go through the ranks of the boomerang army? He is an Australian character who literally has a boomerang as his weapon of choice.
And
is that on the nose? I don't know.
But the boomerangs seem to have special powers because he throws one hovers.
He has trick boomerang, so that's the kind of drone boomerang.
Yeah.
He's got an explosive boomerang. He's got like a slicey knife boomerang.
Where does he keep all these boomerangs?
Yeah, he doesn't have a lot
In his coat next to his cuddly unicorn.
Yeah, which I enjoyed.
Sure. Deadpool stole their thunder on that a little bit. Like, how many cuddly unicorns does one... You know, film universe need not too.
Well, this is the counterpoint.
This is the counterpoint to Deadpool.
Yeah,
interesting. Mm. Yeah, and the counterpoint to Despicable Me as well.
So there's Jai Courtney is Captain Boomerang. Then we have Will Smith as Deadshot, who is the world's greatest assassin, and he is very much, even though it's an ensemble movie, it's him and Margot Robbie who are very much the center of it because they're the big movie stars. Margot Robbie is Harley Quinn, and then there's Jared Leto hovering around on the fringes of the movie as the newest live-action version of the Joker. Now, it's interesting seeing how little he interacts with the Suicide Squad. We'll talk about this in the spoiler special with David Ayer, which will be out next week, the spoiler specials. We're going to talk about it in great detail then. But it's interesting, given that he sent all that stuff to his co-stars during the film, to see how little time he actually has with his co-stars, which really must have pissed him off. Like getting something, a gift from Jared Leto going, but I'm not even... I don't even have a scene with you, dude. What's going on? Why are you sending me this
because
stuff?
Because he's building the universe. He is setting a base for future interactions. He's playing the long game.
He's basically the DC Universe's Kevin Feige. Is that what you're saying? He knows. Not saying that Kevin Feige sends anything to the Avengers.
That we know of.
But are you saying that he knows?
He knows that, you know, Mr. J has got... It's got bigger plans for these characters later on down the line.
Okay. What do we think of Mr. J's Mr. J?
He doesn't get a lot of time to do anything but be a fairly one-note Joker, but it's a nice note.
Yeah.
Helen agrees as well. She'll sort of...
I'm not so keen.
So what didn't you like? Because...
I don't want to get into it too much. We'll talk about it in the spoiler special, but he didn't ring particularly true for me. And again, all those Harley Quinn flashbacks I hated with a passion, and that's a large part of his time on screen. is in those flashbacks.
So is that more a question of that you don't like those flashbacks because of the Joker in them or because of what they were doing plot-wise to
both.
Harley?
Both, okay. I think, yeah. I think because I have trouble with him, that gives me more trouble with her scenes with him.
Okay. I mean, I think he's an interesting presence on screen.
It's interesting, and it's certainly different from the Jokers we've seen before. So
yeah, which I think it needs to be as well. Like, you can't just be like, oh, he's just doing Heath Ledger's Joker. So he's doing something new. But this is the thing, it's not his film. He is a presence in it that flits in and out, and we won't really know how good Jared's Joker is until he is in whatever he's in next.
Let's see that Batman film that they're talking about, for example.
Yeah. I'm intrigued. I was worried when he was cast, even though he's a really, really good actor. But and certainly when they released the first image of him with the damaged tattoo on his head, it's like, hello subtlety. But yeah, he's fine in the film. Is he as good as Heath Ledger and Jack Nicholson? I would say no, but I thought he was fine.
Yeah, but he's not given anywhere near enough time.
He doesn't dominate the film.
Yeah, it's not his film.
Absolutely, and of course he will get the chance to dominate further down the line. I think Will Smith and Margot Robbie are very good in this film. Their roles are perhaps underwritten, and they bring movie star charisma to them, which immediately helps you like them, which is important because the film obviously is about bad people. Will Smith's character is an assassin who's killed hundreds of people. Harley Quinn is off the deep end, that's fair to say. And there are other characters in this. Jay Hernandez is El Diablo, who's a very interesting character who has the power of flame. He can somehow produce and control flame. And he's one of the most intriguing characters in it, but he kills also, who has killed beforehand, dozens of people. And I just thought it's interesting how the movie slowly turns these people around and gets you to, if not root for all of them, at least understand and like most of them by the end of the film.
So, I mean, should we sum up?
We shall sum up.
I think it's very interesting that, I mean, we have, certainly Helen and I have a slight difference of opinion on, as we talked about, with how well Joker worked for us. But I think, in general, people think the same thing about the film, that it's weirdly paced, that the villain doesn't work. And so we all have the same things that we like and disliked for the main, and yet we've come out quite opposed in how much we enjoyed the film overall. And I just actually think that's a really interesting quirk somehow, that we think the same things, and I'm like, I had a blast with it, and you think the same things, and you're like, not bothered.
Yeah, but I can see why people will really like this film and will connect with this film, and it's different from Batman Superman.
It's a lot peppier than Batman Superman, and it isn't quite so self-serious.
I think Batman Superman has its positives. I mean, we've talked about it in the past, but I do think it has its positives, and it, visually it's very, very good. This is a different movie. It's peppier and a bit funkier and trying to be a bit edgier, and it's got good movie star turns, and I think it'll be a big hit. We'll see how it holds up the next few weeks, but I think it's going to do very well at the box office indeed.
Yeah, and I'm certainly going to recommend friends go and see it, just because it's not perfect, but I think people will have a blast in it.
Absolutely. So that's Suicide Squad, this week's big release. We gave it four stars in for Suicide Squad. Get me down to your nearest multiplex. And of course, our spoiler special podcast featuring David Ayer himself, the writer-director, pouring over the film with Nick Desemlian. That's going to be out next week as well, plus us idiots talking about the movie too. So keep your ears peeled for that one. Also out this week is a documentary called Bobby Sands, 66 Days, which is about the IRA hunger striker, played, of course, by Michael Fassbender in Steve McQueen's Hunger. 4 stars we gave that. So if you don't fancy maybe some blockbuster action, that might be up your alley. And there's also a re-release to mark the 30th anniversary of Alex Cox's Sid and Nancy, which is a story of Sid Vicious and Nancy Spungen. And of course, if you pick up this month's issue of Empire Magazine, which has Suicide Squad on the cover, there is a 3-page article about Sid and Nancy with Alex Cox, an exclusive interview with Alex Cox talking about that movie. And that's just one reason to pick up the new issue, but there are many, 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 many more. So there you go. And that is it. That's it for this week's Empire Podcast. That was quick, wasn't it? Join us next week for more film-related fun. We'll be joined by Baz Luhrmann.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's the person in the issue talking about Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, my God. That's it. Baz Luhrmann is in Thor Ragnarok.
Judging by your impression, that's correct.
It was a completely different accent, completely different voice. It was clear it was two different people. I could even do a conversation between them right now, just to show, okay? Hello, Baz.
Hello, Sam.
Spoiler.
Spoilers.
And then Richard Taylor comes in, right?
Yeah.
Hang on. He's coming in now.
Hello, everyone. everybody, it's Richard Tyler here.
Hello. So there you go. See, three different people.
Incredible.
All sounding very, very different. Baz Luhrmann's here next week to talk about his Netflix show, The Get Down, which launches next week, I believe.
12th of August. Not that I'm counting the days.
You've seen the first episode.
I have, and it's really cool.
Oh, okay. So until then, until Baz time, it is goodbye from Helen.
Toodaloo.
It's goodbye from Johnny.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. I'm off to work on a three-way between Baz Luhrmann, Richard Taylor, and Sam Neill. It's not as rude as it sounds. Honest. See you next week. Bye.